This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Lead poisoning. It continues to be the number one environmental poison for children in New York State. Lead is highly toxic, and it's most harmful to children in their early years. And elevated blood lead levels can trigger serious health concerns, ranging from gastrointestinal symptoms to chronic kidney inflammation and even convulsions. And there's a strong link between these high lead levels and reduced IQ and behavioral problems. Joining us to help us better understand these dangers and what can be done about it is Dr. Howard Weinberger. He's an emeritus professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University and the medical director of the Central Eastern New York State Lead Poisoning Prevention Resource Center. Welcome, Dr. Weinberger. Thanks for coming.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
That's quite a title. So lead poisoning in children especially is still a very important environmental issue. Tell us about it.
Well, it's the one we know most about. There are many other environmental problems. I don't want to suggest that lead is the only one, but it's the one we have the most experience with, and it's the one that we really have, I consider, a public health success story, because when I first started in getting involved with lead poisoning, the numbers of children who had very high lead levels were really enormous compared to where we are now.
So we've done something to actually mitigate this.
Absolutely.
I want to get to how we actually mitigate it, but help us right now. Roughly, what do you think the incidence is, both in New York State and then nationally?
Well, the numbers change all the time because the acceptable level is now less than 5 micrograms per deciliter.
So
now,
there's
no such thing as a normal blood lead level. When I first started getting involved with it, the acceptable level was 40 micrograms per deciliter. So as you reduce the acceptable level, the number of children who are listed as affected goes up naturally, because there are still a lot of children who have measurable blood lead levels in this country.
So the point is, it's not normal to have any blood,
lead
in your blood.
Exactly.
But what happened was, at one time they were more, I don't know, loose in their standards, and you could have a much higher level and not considered
I think basically we've learned over the period of years that lead is toxic at every level, and including even as low as 5 micrograms per deciliter, there are potential side effects to some children.
So let's talk about that. What exactly is lead poisoning? What does it mean, and what does it show up as?
Well, lead gets absorbed through the intestinal tract usually, although some children can get it by inhaling when you have an aerosol of lead. For example, if you're scraping or sanding a wall with lead in it, you can breathe it in. But most children get exposed by ingesting lead. How do they get it? They get it from products that have lead on them, and the most common one is still leaded paint in houses.
And that still exists?
Until 1970s, almost every house in this country had leaded paint, outside as well as inside. Legislation passed in the late 1970s limited the amount of lead that could be used on indoor paint. Well, 1970s is not that far back. So if you look at some of the statistics in New York State, particularly upstate New York, 75% of homes were built before the 1970s, meaning that there's still going to be a reservoir of lead for children well into the future. Now, this isn't true, by the way, of every state in the country. There's, you know, some areas are newer communities out in the West where the percentage of houses that were older are much less. So New York State is really at the forefront of limiting this issue and looking at a very, very continued high risk well into the future.
Yeah, we want to talk about how they're taking steps to mitigate the exposure. But basically what happens is the children perhaps ingest a chip of paint that gets dislodged from a wall or a...
Right. As a house gets older, the paint dries, it desiccates, it becomes like a potato chip to the child. And if it becomes accessible, they may chew on it. And ironically, lead paint tastes sweet. So... And you can see how
it's attractive.
A child is attractive to a child.
So who, besides, obviously, let's run through, who are the people who are most at risk for lead poisoning?
Well, the age group under 5 is the age group where children tend to put things in their mouth anyway. It's a normal behavior to chew on things, rubbing your teeth when you're teething. And so that's a normal developmental phenomenon. Unfortunately, there are other children, developmentally delayed children, autistic children, who continue to do that kind of behavior well into their teenagers. So that's still the highest risk age group. We're now more also very concerned about pregnant women.
Why?
Pregnant women have a variety of, the term is called pica, which is behavior of eating something as non-food products. These are habits socially, culturally. For example, some women eat starch during their pregnancy. Some women have a preference for chewing on certain kinds of wood. There are a variety of cultural differences all over the world. And if you find some behavior that is at risk, like, for example, eating dirt or soil during your pregnancy, you can have a very high lead level. And there are also exposures during occupations and also during hobbies. So we've learned over the last, I'd say, decade to be very concerned about the exposure during pregnancy and the possible prenatal exposure to the fetus and to the infant.
So the unborn child is going
exactly,
to be, is going to be affected by that.
Exactly. And we really have no information about what the long-term effects of that is.
What other groups also? There are some other groups that you had mentioned to me that new Americans.
Yes, well,
what do we mean
by
that?
We now in central New York, across the country, are inviting people from other parts of the world to come to the United States. And so we have populations coming from areas of the world where they have very, very different standards. For example, there are many less, there's no EPA, for example, in China to reduce pollution.
And in fact, not to interrupt you, but in fact, some of the toys that have come from China have been found to have
lead. That was
lead.
A couple of years ago.
Right.
They were toys that were painted with leaded paint. Actually, that didn't really create too much of a hazard, but it gave us an opportunity to educate the public about another potential source. So, for example, if you come from a country where they still use leaded gasoline, you can get exposed to lead that way. And then there are other issues we learned. Every year we learn about different cultural issues, spices, herbs, home remedies, medicines that people bring with them, thinking that it's good for the patient, for the child, but not knowingly that it's laced with lead.
Wow.
So every new population that comes into the country, by CDC law, the children up until age 16 have to have a lead level before they come in.
And hopefully educate the population.
A, find out if they have had lead exposure. B, to try to educate them not to continue doing the behavior that they had before.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with pediatrician Dr. Howard Weinberger, and we're talking about the dangers of lead poisoning. So basically, the largest source of lead has been paint.
Still is the same. That's still the same source, right? That's still the major source.
What symptoms do you see for lead poisoning?
In most children, you don't see any. And the ones we pick up are very subtle. You mentioned gastrointestinal symptoms like constipation, because lead does have an effect on the nerves in the intestinal tract. But as the level goes up, as the blood level goes up, then additional symptoms can appear. And the worst, of course, are you mentioned seizures or convulsions. That suggests that lead has affected the brain acutely. And that is a term we call lead encephalopathy. You don't ever want to see that, because that has terrible long-term side effects.
But it also sounds like even if it can be a lower level, it can have subtle effects on behavior,
development. Absolutely. That's what we've learned in the last, I'd say, 20 years. People have recognized, psychiatrists, neurologists have recognized that there are subtle findings that we had never even associated with lead levels. And so behavioral problems, learning disabilities, even some children who have ADHD, the attention deficit disorder, may be associated with lead exposure as well.
So how is it treated? Let's say you discover an abnormally high lead level. Is there a treatment?
Yeah, there is a treatment. It's called chelation, where you give a particular chemical which absorbs the lead in the blood and allows it to be excreted through the kidneys. The problem is, as any treatment, has side effects itself. So we try to avoid using chelating agents unless the level is much higher. Higher is an arbitrary number. We use levels in the mid-40s to 50 to treat. Otherwise, what we do in this county and most counties, we have a tremendous public health relationship with the health department, where public health nurses go out to a home and check with environmental equipment to see if there's an exposure that we can identify and then prevent continued exposure.
So let's talk about prevention, because clearly that's where the money is, so to speak.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Especially as you've outlined, in this particular region, we have so many homes that still have lead paint. First of all, does painting over the lead paint take care of the problem?
Well, that's a good question. It all it does is gives you a cosmetic result, but because the lead is still there, it's still, if it's still accessible to the child, that's not a solution. And that creates a problem, because in order to rehabilitate a home, it has to be done very carefully. And there are rules now for people who do remediation. They have to pass a test, and they have to wear special equipment and special a ventilator for themselves so that they don't only get exposed to the lead when they do that. Yes, you can remove the lead, but it's very, very expensive. In fact, in some people say the most cost-effective thing to do is replace the windows, because windows, sashes would go up and down summer, winter. You create a lead hazard when you're actually opening and closing the windows every time. So that if there's one thing that one could do is really replace the windows and the frame around the windows. But that in itself is expensive.
Are there other things that we can do that are being done? For example, in New York State, I read somewhere that things like washing the floors, the countertops, the windowsills on a weekly basis.
Sure, wet mopping and wet mop is very helpful. One thing that we tend to forget is New York State has a regulation from the State Health Department that all children, not just low-income children, but all children should have a blood lead test at 1 and 2 years of age. And many of my colleagues in practice object to it. They say, I never saw a child with lead poisoning in my office, but you can't identify a lead level by just looking at a child's face. You have to get a blood test. And what that does is it tells us if the child has even a modestly, and I use those terms, carefully, modestly elevated level, you can then prevent continued exposure. So by doing a lead test at a year of age, you get a baseline. If it's acceptable level, great. And then you do it again at 2 years, because in that second year of life is really the high-risk year. That's when the child is mobile,
right?
When the child can
crawling
reach up,
everywhere,
crawling,
yep.
Reaching up to the wood, to the windowsills.
Walking.
Right. And so that's the age. Actually, the second year is really the most high-risk year. So by doing blood testing at 1 and 2 years of age, that is a way of doing primary and secondary prevention. I say secondary because if you have an elevated level, then you can try to prevent continued exposure.
So that at that point, education comes in.
Exactly.
People come in and try to mitigate the home environment.
Exactly.
All of those things to basically prevent it. So that's actively going on. Is it going on throughout the country or just?
It is, but not the way it is in certain states. Again, New York State is, I think, at the forefront of this because we do have older housing market, right?
Well, it sounds like you started out with very happy news. I don't want to run out of time. Basically, you think you have mitigated, in large part, some of the exposure.
Absolutely. I just point out, just to note that in 2013, we did actually treat 12 children across New York State, across the eastern half of New York State, in hospital for lead exposure.
So it absolutely remains a problem.
It still remains a problem.
And the point is that the key point to take away here is you should have your child tested.
Absolutely.
At 1 and 2 years of age to know if you have this problem in your environment.
Right.
And then obviously, with the help of New York State, take some steps to mitigate it.
Exactly right.
Well, I thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Howard Weinberger, Professor Emeritus of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, and he's the Medical Director of the Central Eastern New York State Lead Poisoning Prevention Resource Center. Once again, thanks so much for coming in. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.